A straightforward menu. Spaghetti with tomato sauce, fried calamari, fresh fruit, a beer, and a coffee. Seated at the bar table, Ilario Bertuzzi awaits the two passengers he is supposed to transport to Milan Linate with the Morin Soulier 760B twinjet aircraft, a plane on which our pilot has spent approximately 600 hours. Who are the passengers? The first one is a young American journalist, William McHale, tasked with writing an article about the other passenger on board, Enrico Mattei, the protagonist of our story, politician, entrepreneur, and above all, president of the ENI, the Italian National Oil Company. The two are late, and the departure time has been delayed, along with a change in destination. This will force the plane to pass through a depression area where better weather is expected. Despite these setbacks, Bertuzzi cannot imagine that this will be his last flight.
Enrico Mattei was born in 1906 in a small town in the Marche, an Italian region in a humble family. He began his political apprenticeship in the fascist era, later leading the Christian Democratic Partisans. He was then elected as a member of the Constituent Assembly in 1946, but he finally abandoned his direct political involvement in order to assume the presidency of ENI in 1953, which he would transform into an international powerful company in less than 4 years. Mattei had grand ambitions. He pursued the dream of Italian oil independence, challenging the balances imposed by the American-led post-war Western bloc. He questioned the hegemony of the Seven Sisters, a term he coined for the major global oil companies. Crossing political boundaries, he attempted to make Italy an international actor in the Mediterranean area.
He challenged the two superpowers, the USA and the USSR, inaugurating an Italian third way between capitalism and communism, entrusting an entirely public entity with the task of being the main promoter of Italy's economic development after the World War II. However, Enrico Mattei's epic was destined to end tragically.
At 5 to 5 p.m. on the 27th of October 1962, the Morin Saulnier 760B, carrying Enrico Mattei and the young journalist interviewing him, takes off from Catania. It flies at an altitude higher than recommended due to the bad weather. At 3 to 7 p.m., pilot Ilario Bertuzzi begins to descend to Milan Linate. Suddenly, communications between the control tower and the pilot stop. The plane no longer responds, causing panic at the airport. The Morin Saulnier has crashed in the fields of Bescapè, a little village nearby, while approaching Linate Airport.
Only debris remains of the plane. The aircraft's body is reduced to the tail end, along with some pieces of the rudders. The landing gear is projected forward and only an intact tire remains. The wings, however, are completely destroyed and irreparable. But what caused the plane crash? A few days after the Bescapè tragedy, the first judicial inquiry was opened. A further investigative committee is appointed by the Ministry of Defense.
According to the conclusive report of the ministry inquiry in March 1963,
at the time of the incident, due to the late hour and the bad weather condition, as well as the sparsely populated nature of the incident location, it was not possible to collect useful witnesses.
However, some witnesses were provided. On the 28th of October, the day after the accident, an interview with Mario Ronchi, the farmer who owned the land where Mattei's plane crashed, was published in Corriere della Sera, an Italian newspaper.
I found the thunder strange, because even though it was raining, it didn't seem like a stormy weather. So I ran to the yard and stayed there, with tremendous fear. The sky was red, burning like a big bonfire, and the flames were falling all around. At first, I thought it was a fire. Then I understood it had to be an airplane. It had caught fire, and the pieces were falling on the fields, under the water. I thought it could help someone, but I was wrong. The passengers were burned. There were maybe 3 or 4 people. It wasn't clear. I immediately ran to inform the Landriano officers.
However, this testimony is not considered relevant for the investigations, perhaps because, already the day after the article's publication, Mario Ronchi changes his story. Formally, the farmer is heard for the first time on the 29th of October by Officer Augusto Pelosi, to whom he reports a version completely contradicting the previous one. He claims not to have seen or heard anything that evening. He even says he wasn't on the farm at the time of the accident, but he was returning from Bescape, driving a noisy tractor that, even if he wanted to, wouldn't have allowed him to hear a thunder. He says he only saw the fire near his home and called the cops after hearing his mother mentioning a noise just before. Why does Mario Ronchi tell different stories? What or who forced him to change his version?
Moreover, during the Rai TV news of the day before, on 28th of October, Ronchi had given an interview. When asked, "What did you see and hear?" the farmer began to speak, but at a certain point, the audio mysteriously disappeared, while he was describing what he had seen and heard, only returning almost at the end of the interview.
The experts of the second judicial inquiry opened in 1995 will manage to reconstruct a significant part of the interview through lip reading, according to which the witness would have stated that he heard a roar and a crash, and saw the fire. This testimony contradicts the one given to Officer Pelosi, but perfectly matches the version reported in the Corriere della Sera newspaper. What happened? Who deleted part of the audio and induced Ronchi to lie about what he heard and saw? An episode recounted later by the same farmer from Bescape may raise some suspicions.
The day after the plane crash, some SNAM employees took me to San Donato Milanese, to an office that I believe was the headquarters of SNAM. In that office, I was questioned about what I had seen the previous evening.
In this way, SNAM appears, which is an energy infrastructure company connected to Eni, which, after Mattei's death, has significant changes both in leadership and structure. Ronchi himself will admit that. Shortly after Mattei's death, he would be finally connected to electricity after years of futile requests. Additionally, SNAM would build a road on his land and would clean the area where the plane crashed for free. It will also start paying Ronchi 800,000 lire per year for a simple service, cleaning and cutting the grass in the company's enclosure.
Despite the suspicions that some newspapers continue to fuel, the first judicial inquiry concludes on 31st of March 1966. The verdict declares that no action should be taken regarding crimes attributed to unknown people because the related facts do not exist.
However, doubts about these conclusions are fueled in the next few years by statements from authoritative representatives of institutions and revelation from justice collaborators. The second inquiry, opened in 1995 and closed in 2004, overturns the previous verdict, supporting the validity of sabotage hypothesis.
Oral, documentary, and logical evidence collected, while allowing the context in which the crime occurred, does not allow the identification of the material perpetrators, nor concerning the instigators, can go beyond suspicions and speculations. However, the impossibility of identifying the instigators leads to the closure of this inquiry with a request for archiving as well.
The Mattei case remains one of the mysteries of the Italian Republic history, a full-fledged mystery, made up of archived and reopened investigations, stolen wrecks, hypotheses of sabotage, exhumation of bodies, new expertise revelations from mafia informers, and speculations about the involvement of secret services. A mystery that, so far, remains unsolved.